all day, hoping that their flights will take off at some point. I count 14 in total, mostly fishermen anxious to get out to their camps. It's easy to spot the ones who aren't from Alaska. They're pacing around the lounge like caged animals, peering out at the sky every time they pass the window, grumbling with impatience. Those familiar with how things work sit quietly in their chairs, their attention on their phone screens or their knitting needles, or those they're traveling with. Planes were cleared for takeoff an hour ago. Half the flights have already left. Now it's just a matter of being called. The guys are loading it up, Dolores. Sharon smiles sympathetically at the woman. The supply plane that she's hitching a ride with was stuck in a village overnight and was just landing when I got here. You must be excited to see your sister again after a year. Dolores shrugs and mutters, I wish she'd moved down here. To me, Sharon explains, you should see the village where Dolores is from. It's near Barrow. I haven't been, but Max has. The sun hasn't set since when, Dolores?
Early May,
the old woman confirms.
Right, early May. It'll finally go down in a few weeks, and then it doesn't come up for 2 months in winter, at all. We can't even fly there during the polar nights.
They get their supplies in the fall, or not at all,
Dolores confirms.
And it's cold up there all the time.
Sharon shivers. What's the high for there today?
40.
Dolores tugs on her quilted coat as if to emphasize that. I do the quick calculation in my head. That's 3 degrees Celsius at the beginning of August. I shudder at the thought. Dolores's wise gaze zones in on me.
Who's this girl? Your replacement?
Sharon laughs. No, this is Ren's daughter. She's just visiting. I get a curious once-over, much like the one I got from the woman at the grocery store. At least I don't feel as out of place today with my bare face and my flannel jacket. And then her gaze shifts to something behind me. A genuine smile stretches across the old lady's face, showcasing misshapen yellowed teeth.
There you are.
On your way to see Helen again?
My heart skips a beat at the sound of Jonah's deep voice.
Unfortunately, are you taking me?
A hopeful sparkle dances in her black eyes. Does everyone in Alaska know and like Jonah?
Not this time, but don't worry. You'll be in good hands with Jim.
He moves in to lean against the end of the desk, a position that allows him to face both of us while he talks. I can't seem to find the nerve to acknowledge him with a look or even a nod, and so I keep my focus on the old woman while watching him in my peripherals, all while my skin prickles with an electric current and my cheeks heat. 3 hours in the drizzle helped cool my hormones, both literally and figuratively. Letting that happen with Jonah this morning was a bad idea. I don't regret it. How can I regret anything that felt that good? But it can't lead anywhere, so what's the point? I'm going back to Toronto where I belong, and he's staying here in Alaska where he belongs. It's a dead end. It was a mistake. Dolores's black eyes crawl over Jonah's face, pausing on his stitches.
I heard about the accident.
Just a scratch. I'm fine. I'm ready to go.
Because you're insane. She frowns.
There's something different about you, though.
No, there isn't.
His voice is gruff, but his tone is teasing.
Yes, there is.
She searches his face again.
I can't put my finger on it.
And I can't tell if she's joking or not. He finally got a haircut! Maxine hollers from her seat a few feet over. She's a short, plump woman with a loud voice and an even louder laugh. Dolores makes a grunting sound, then studies him another long moment.
I liked the old beard better,
she finally states, as if he were waiting for her to pass judgment.
You're too pretty now.
He grins, a move that shows off those deep dimples. He's not in the least bit offended by her blunt and critical opinion.
Not as pretty as I'd look without it. Besides, some women like their men pretty.
A pause, and then he turns to look at me dead center.
Right, Calla?
I feel all their eyes on me as my face burns. I clear my throat. Some might, you ass. His knowing eyes crinkle with amusement,
an ass you want to kiss again, he seems to be saying. And he'd be right. Bad idea, Calla. Bad. Horrible. Marie! Sharon's excited shriek breaks up our intense deadlock. She waddles around the desk in time to greet the tall, willowy blonde woman who just came through the door. Did she say Marie? As in, the Marie? The veterinarian who flies in once a month to save everyone's animals? The crusader who vaccinated a raccoon for Jonah? The friend who Agnes is convinced wants to be much more than friends with him? The stitched Dr. Marie Lair across her jacket's breast pocket pretty much confirms it. I try not to gape as I take in those mile-long legs clad in blue jeans and her long golden blonde tendrils of hair, damp from the rain and yet still falling around her shoulders in a natural sexy beach wave. She has lively teal blue eyes, surrounded by a fringe of lashes that are thick and long, but naturally so. Her nose is dainty, her lips are full, and while her cheekbones may not do much for her, the rounded shape of her face is flattering. I'd put her in her early 30s with a fresh girl-next-door vibe. Not a stitch of makeup touches her face. I remember wondering what kind of woman would interest Jonah. I feel like I just met her. And, friend or not, I'd bet money that he slept with her. Dolores is scuttling back to her seat as Sharon ropes her arms around Marie's neck. Did you just land? Yeah, rough flight. Marie returns the hug, but she seems discombobulated, her attention flickering from Jonah to Sharon, and then Jonah again as if not sure where to focus. Okay, first of all, wow, look at that belly! And it's only been 4 weeks since I saw you last. Only, you say, Sharon groans, smoothing her hands over her midsection. And you. Marie's eyebrows arch halfway up her forehead as she comes around the desk. What the hell, Jonah? He folds his arms around her, pulling her against him. She's tall, but she looks petite pressed up against him like that.
What the hell indeed,
he murmurs.
Hey, Marie.
They break apart, and she reaches up to smooth her long fingers, with bare, neatly trimmed nails, over his beard, in a way that screams intimacy. The way a woman might reach up to lazily stroke a man's face in bed after sex.
I like it, she murmurs.
I'm sure you do. How many times have they done it anyway? Does Jonah like to play childish games with her too? Did he corner her in a narrow hallway to steal a kiss that first time? Did he realize she'd be coming in today when he was busy making moves on me this morning? Will he be MIA for the next however many days while she's in town? At least Jonah's hands aren't all over her. In fact, he's moved back to his casual leaning-on-desk position. His gaze drifts to me.
I was the victim of a cruel and vicious prank.
I push aside my growing unease to roll my eyes dramatically for him. He chuckles.
I probably deserved it.
Probably, I echo, my voice laden with sarcasm. Marie's teal eyes do a curious but quick down-and-up scan of me.
This is Ren's daughter, Calla,
Jonah says.
She's here visiting.
I didn't realize Ren had a daughter, Marie says slowly. She offers a hand and a smile, though it's not nearly as bright a smile as the one she flashed Jonah.
First time in Alaska?
Yeah.
I picked her up from Anchorage last weekend. It's been interesting so far.
Jonah smiles secretively and, damn it, I'm blushing again. Marie's gaze darts back and forth between us, and there's no way she's as clueless as Mabel was. So where are you from?
Toronto.
Oh, that's far. She says it in an, oh, that's too bad way, emphasizing it with a pointed glance at Jonah, as if to make sure he realizes it.
And how long are you here for?
Another week.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken, a sigh of satisfaction passes her lips. One more week and she's away from Jonah for good. Unless I decide to stay longer, I blurt out without thinking. Jonah's left eyebrow quirks. I don't know why I said that. That's a lie. I know exactly why I said it. An uncomfortable feeling pangs in my stomach. I don't believe this. I'm jealous of Marie. I caught my boyfriend of a year being handsy with Stephanie DuPont, and I waved goodbye. Meanwhile, one moment of intimacy with Jonah, and I'm ready to extend my stay so I can stake my claim against his attractive female friend. This is what I get for kissing Jonah. A coughing fit on the other side of the office door announces my dad a moment before he pops his head out from the office.
Hey, Marie. Has it been a month already?
Marie's face splits into a wide grin. It always feels too long for me, Ren. I thought you got rid of that chest cold already.
Yeah. Guess it's hanging on there.
No one not the wiser would notice the way he shifts on his feet, as if uncomfortable with the lie. To Jonah, he says,
The report says the fog is cleared for the time being, but there's heavy cloud cover, possibility of light rain.
Jonah stands upright with a resigned sigh, and I can't help but admire the shape of his chest, remembering what my hands felt like pressed against it just this morning.
I'll fly low. It's probably as good as it's gonna get.
What's going on? Marie asks, her eyes seemingly absorbed with Jonah's face.
Going to pick up some hikers. They've been waiting at the checkpoint since Thursday.
You want company? She offers eagerly.
I've already got it, thanks. Promised her a flight up that way. Might as well kill two birds with one stone.
It takes me a moment to realize Jonah's talking about me. I struggle to wipe the shock from my face. He never promised me anything. Is this his way of avoiding time alone with Marie? Or spending more time alone with me? This is where I need to decline, to tell him to go ahead and take Marie. It'll send a clear message that this morning was a mistake and that I'm not interested in repeating it.
Are you ready?
He looks pointedly at me. Yeah, let's do it. Oh, Kawa. An odd blend of excitement and fear churns inside me. Am I ready? Forget whatever's happening with Jonah for the moment. Am I ready to get back in a plane after watching him crash just 2 days ago? Why does this feel like a test? Another, let's find out what you're made of, Jonah adventure. Only this time, I care if he likes what he sees. My dad eyes the two of us for a moment as if weighing something in his head. Finally, he turns to Jonah. They share a long look.
No risks,
he warns him.
In and out,
Jonah promises solemnly. There's another one, I exclaim, aiming my camera lens downward to try and capture the moose as it cuts through the river that snakes along the valley, the broad crown of antlers atop its head almost regal. Those things are huge. My eyes have been glued to the ground ever since we spotted a small herd of caribou grazing near the opening of the mountain range. It's an entirely different landscape on this end of the Kuskokwim River than the side that weaves through the tundra. Here, the valley is a mingling of tall, tapered evergreens, meadows with smatterings of pink and purple wildflowers, and wide, rocky river shorelines, the colors that much more vivid against the murky gray ceiling.
You'll find pretty much everything up here. Wolves, caribou, reindeer, sheep.
Jonah's attention is on the flight path ahead, which I'm thankful for because we're flying low, and on either side of us are mountains, their tops shrouded by mist.
Keep an eye out and you might catch a grizzly or three.
Are there a lot? He chuckles.
You're in bear country. What do you think?
I shudder, and yet find myself scouring the waters with new interest. How long have these hikers been in here anyway?
We dropped them off 8 days ago.
8 days? I try to imagine what that means. That's 8 days of slugging camping gear up and down mountains. 8 days wandering around the wilderness, with bears sleeping in a tent, with bears searching for food, with bears. 8 days without a toilet or a warm shower, with bears. That's crazy.
That's pretty normal for up here. It's crazy if you don't know what you're doing. Hopefully these two did. They're a husband and wife from Arizona. I think they said it was their 15th anniversary or something.
Pooping in a hole for 8 days. How romantic, I mutter wryly.
Some people think so. Out here in the middle of nowhere, you can do pretty much whatever you want.
He counters, and I get the distinct impression that he's speaking from experience. Yeah. It's just them, a million mosquitoes, and the giant grizzlies roaming around their tent at night. He chuckles.
They don't usually bug you unless you do something stupid, but that's why I bring a gun when I camp.
And what, load it and tuck it under your pillow? I shake my head. Hell no. You couldn't pay me to sleep out here, and I don't care how experienced the person I'm with is.
No.
A pause.
Even if you were with me?
He throws that out there so casually, and yet his words weigh heavily with meaning. I swallow against the sudden flutter in my gut, unprepared for this quick turn of conversation, even though I've been rubbing my sweaty palms against my thighs in anticipation of it ever since we pushed through the doors of Wild. Jonah's been all business since takeoff, though, his fists gripping the yoke tightly to keep the plane steady against crosswinds that I was sure would sweep us off the runway. He's been on the radio with other pilots almost constantly, heeding their warnings and navigating around patches of fog and heavier rain. Based on some of their reports, it doesn't sound like this weather system is in any rush to leave this side of the state. Flying with Jonah today has been nothing short of tense, and an entirely different experience than the last time. I can't tell if it's because it feels riskier with the unstable conditions outside, or if it has more to do with the conditions brewing inside this cramped fuselage. Even though I know it was a mistake, I can't stop thinking about that kiss. The rain, the turbulence, all competing with thoughts of Jonah's mouth on mine and the way he was breathing when he pulled away. And now we're in this misty valley and he's talking about us having sex. I mean, he didn't say that exactly, but that's what I heard, and I'm suddenly picturing the two of us stretched out naked on an air mattress with the door to our orange dome tent wide open to this great wilderness. And it does sound insanely romantic. That might be okay. My eyes are locked on the river. I sound almost shy. When have I ever been shy with a guy who's so obviously flirting with me, who I'm pretty sure has been flirting with me the last couple of days and I completely missed it, who is making my nerve endings tingle and parts of me ache to be touched? Is he as turned on as I am? Have his legs fallen apart that wide because he's got a...
might be?
I push the illicit thought away with a throat clear. Yeah. You're a much bigger target for a bear, and I'm pretty sure I can run faster than you. The deep chuckle that carries through the headset sends shivers down my spine and makes me smile dumbly. I'm becoming addicted to making him laugh. Unfortunately, the playful conversation dies down as the drizzle grows harder and the wind begins to pick up. Jonah grips the yoke more tightly, his furrowed gaze on darker clouds ahead.
Those don't look good. No, they don't.
He agrees.
That's the thing about up here. The weather can turn on a dime, but we're not far off our checkpoint. We'll make it there.
Okay. I realize that I trust him completely. It seems like a stupid time to ask, but trust or not, I need a distraction from the constant jolting. So, Marie, what's going on there?
What do you mean?
I turn to watch his profile for clues. Maybe Dolores is right and he's too pretty now because those full lips of his don't belong on a man like him. Neither do those lashes, which might be as long as my fake ones. You know exactly what I mean. Blue eyes flicker my way for a split second before returning to the sky.
Why do you want to know?
Just curious. I echo his words from earlier when he asked about Corey. He smirks.
Marie and I are friends.
Even though she wants more?
Does she?
I roll my eyes. Stop playing dumb. You know she does. He flips a switch on the cockpit panel.
Why do you care?
I don't. He shakes his head.
You're such a Fletcher.
What's that supposed to mean?
It means just come out and ask me what you really want to know, Calla.
He sounds annoyed. Fine. Did you two ever date?
Nope.
I hesitate. Did you two hook up?
Define hook up.
I guess that answers that, I mutter, more to myself, letting my gaze drift to the mountain ridge.
She kissed me once.
And?
I can't give her what she wants. I'm not at that place in my life.
He doesn't seem at all bothered to be telling me. She's really pretty, I hazard.
And smart, and caring. But I just want to be friends with her. She knows it. I've been clear all along.
I can't suppress my sigh of relief fast enough.
I take it that's the answer you wanted to hear?
I turn away to hide my sheepish smile. He's too damn observant, and blunt, and inherently decent if he hasn't taken advantage of the tall, blonde, leggy veterinarian's attraction to him at least once in a moment of male weakness.
"What else do you want to ask me?"
he murmurs. I hesitate for only a second. What's the point of stopping now? Why did you kiss me today?
Because I wanted to, and I knew you wanted me to.
Such a simple, straightforward answer. Exactly what I've come to expect from Jonah. He pauses.
Am I wrong?
No. Unfortunately, there are too many obstacles trailing it that I'm struggling to ignore. Don't you think it's a bit risky? I mean, that it might complicate things with everything else going on? Plus, I'm leaving in... My voice drifts as realization dawns. I'm leaving in a week. It'll be a nice, clean, uncomplicated end to whatever is happening between us. A soft, oh, right, slips from my lips. Of course. That's exactly what he wants. And here I am, reading way too much into one kiss, especially from a guy I despised a week ago. This is why I don't do hookups.
Of course, what?
An orange bush plane suddenly appears in the sky, traveling toward us. It grabs Jonah's attention and splices our conversation. A moment later, the radio is crackling with a call out from him, delivering an ominous warning about hellish headwinds and torrential rain around the ridge bend that he barely outran. I feel my face fill with worry. Are we turning around?
Can't. We're here anyway.
The right wing tips, and we begin to descend. Chapter 21. This is definitely the right place, I mutter, huddled within my slicker, my head bowed as I trail Jonah along a narrow footpath that cuts through the forest of spruce trees and leggy ground cover. It's a trek from where we left the plane. My jaw is sore from clenching my teeth so tight with that bumpy landing, and my leggings are soaked from rain that's coming down more sideways than straight.
It's the only place around here.
A branch snaps somewhere to our right, loud enough to carry through the downpour. Jonah? I hold my breath as my head whips around, my eyes searching the trees.
Relax. Our plane would have spooked most things. It's probably the lanterns.
Right. I speed up to close the distance between us all the same, shielding my eyes with my hand as I take in an archway. Someone constructed it out of tree trunks and rope. A hand-carved wooden sign dangles from the center. A set of antlers sits on top. It's fitting and oddly welcoming, out here in the middle of nowhere. A small log cabin sits up ahead. It looks to be well cared for and supplied. The pile of cut logs and twiggy brush stacked by a simple wood door substantial. On the right is a rustic shelving unit that holds various boxes, tools, string, work gloves, and two black tanks with flammable warning stickers plastered to them. Various tools hang on the exterior wall from pegs, protected from the inclement weather by a wide overhang. Public shelter cabin, I read from the sign above the door, my eyes drifting to the enormous set of antlers mounted above it, and the snowshoes on either side. Is this for anyone to use?
Pretty much. It's been here forever, since like the 1930s, I think. It's mostly used during the Iditarod. That's one of the big dog sled races in Alaska.
He adds, rapping his knuckles against the door.
Hello?
He waits three beats and then yanks the door open and walks in. It smells exactly how I'd expect a 90-year-old cabin in the mountains to smell, like musty wood and damp soot.
They haven't made it here yet,
Jonah declares, followed by a sharp,
fuck.
There's certainly no evidence to suggest they're here now. The three tiny windows are all boarded up from the outside by plywood. The bunk beds in the far corners, simple frames of wood slapped together and bolted to hold, are absent of any sleeping bags. The wooden picnic table beside the wood stove is bare of supplies. There are supplies here. Lanterns hanging from hooks, rolls of toilet paper, and tubs of baby wipes stacked on shelves. A jug of Crisco oil sitting on a long makeshift counter next to an array of pots and pans. But I suspect those were left by previous inhabitants. Or by the caretakers. Maybe they left because we were late? He crouches down to open up and peer inside the wood stove.
No. With all this rain, they'd need a fire, and this hasn't been used in a while. Besides, they knew the pickup date would be pending weather.
So where are they, then? He stands and pushes a hand through his wet hair, slicking it back.
Good fucking question.
His jaw clenches. Do you think they're lost?
They wouldn't be the first.
He drums his fingertips against the table in thought.
They had a sat phone, but they didn't use it.
A darker, more sinister thought strikes me after our earlier conversation. What if something got them? You know, like a bear?
That doesn't happen too often,
he murmurs, but he's wearing a troubled frown.
You didn't notice any tents or rain gear or anything when we were flying in, did you?
No, nothing. The last sign of another human being, aside from the guy in the plane, was a fishing boat anchored on the river a good 10 minutes before we entered the mountain range. He studies the dusty, worn wood floorboards intently.
They should have been here on Thursday night for a Friday pickup. That means they're almost 2 days behind.
Did they say where they were going?
Through Rainy Pass. They gave me a map. They could be stuck up there because of the heavy rain, or they could have slipped along the muddy terrain. The river could have swelled on them. Who the fuck knows?
Jonah wanders out the door to stand under the overhang, his gaze drifting to the mountain ridge that looms in thought. You're not thinking of going back up to look for them, are you? When he doesn't answer me, I know that's exactly what he's thinking. You are not going up there in this to look for them. He curses, his hands smoothing over his beard.
No, I'm not.
Relief overwhelms me. He pulls out his satellite phone from his pocket.
I'm gonna call this in.
I huddle against the doorframe, listening to rain beat against the roof and Jonah explain the situation to someone. My dad, I'm guessing. The connection must be poor, because Jonah is speaking loudly and repeats himself several times, emphasizing no hikers, heavy rain, and staying here. What did my dad say? I ask when he ends the call, slipping the phone back into his pocket.
He's gonna notify the state troopers. They'll have to start a search as soon as the weather cooperates. Nothing else I can do right now.
All right. So now what? I shiver against the damp cold. I still haven't warmed up from this morning's berry picking.
Now, you and I are stuck here until we can fly out.
Something about the way he says, you and I, draws another shiver from me. This one not from the cold. For how long? His chest lifts with a deep inhale.
Could be for the night.
The night? My eyes rove the cold, musty little cabin, stalling on the wooden base of the bunk beds. There's no mattress, no blankets, no pillows. Not that I'd use anything left here. No electricity, no plumbing.
You think you can handle that, Barbie?
I turn back to find Jonah's piercing gaze settled on me. Something tells me he's talking about more than just the rugged conditions. My stomach does a flip. Don't call me that.
Prove me wrong, then.
He challenges, taking a step forward, well into my personal space. I stand my ground, my heart beginning to race. Thoughts of missing hikers and bears and outhouses and bad ideas vanish, replaced by a simple one, that I desperately want him to kiss me again. I tip my head back and gaze into intense blue eyes.
You're Ren's daughter.
I frown. Yeah? What's he getting at?
About what you said in the plane. I know where you were going with that.
His brow furrows lightly.
You're Ren's daughter. I wouldn't use you like that.
I'm not following. But my stomach is tightening with anxiety that the next thing out of his mouth will be something along the lines of, you're right, it was a mistake and we should cool it. Because despite already seeing the end of the ride ahead, I'm ready to jump in the car and experience the thrill.
I'm saying that I might take risks, but they're always worth it. Got it?
I think so? Not really. My gaze drifts to his mouth. Ask me if I want you to kiss me again. Please. Abruptly, he pulls back.
We've got to set up camp. I'll start a fire when I get back.
Back from where?
The plane. We need my gear.
He hollers into the wild. I watch his retreating back, his shoulders hunched against the pelting rain as he marches down the path toward the plane. leaving me out here in the woods, all alone. Wait! I run to catch up to him.
You should have stayed put,
Jonah mutters, crouching in front of the wood stove, shoving thin strips of wood into its mouth, the floor around him wet from the rain that drips off his body. I probably should have, I admit, wringing water from my hair as I lean against the open door, taking in the tall weeds and wildflower blooms that bend under the rain's pummel. Jonah had just dragged out a nylon bag from the undercarriage when the skies seemed to open up with a deluge. We jogged all the way back, but it didn't matter. My rain boots, the slicker, none of it offered enough protection. Do you always fly with this stuff? I eye the gear Jonah dumped on the floor, trying to ignore the beige case that holds a gun.
Have to. A lot of it's law. Besides, you get stranded out here once, and you learn to be more prepared next time around. We're lucky, though. We could be stuck in a cold plane for the night. Instead, we've got this cozy little paradise.
Our definitions of paradise are very different. I hug myself tightly as Jonah strikes a match. Within moments, my nostrils fill with the comforting scent of burning wood. The flames begin to crackle.
It'll take a bit to warm up in here.
Jonah strolls past me, out the door and around the corner, and I find myself holding my breath against the hope that he would have stalled there, would have looked down at me, smiled at me, grazed a hand against mine. Anything. There's an odd prying sound. Jonah? What are you doing out there? I call out with a frown. I assumed he was going to relieve himself, something I'll have to do when I can't avoid that log outhouse any longer. Suddenly, daylight streams into the cabin through the tiny window on the left. Within minutes, Jonah has the other two windows uncovered too. He reappears, his hair plastered to his forehead, raindrops dripping from his beard.
We need to close this door if we want to dry out.
He pulls it shut behind him, herding me inside. Despite the small portals in the walls, it's still dark in here, and it takes a few minutes for my eyes to adjust to the heavy shadows. Jonah checks the fire, decides something, and then shoves a log into it. The fire grows. You're a regular Boy Scout, aren't you?
I know how to survive, if that's what you mean.
And thank God for that. I imagine being stranded out here with Corey. Last fall, the idiot threw wet logs onto a lit bonfire and then nearly set himself on fire while pouring gasoline over them and the flames to try to get them to burn. Even I, a city girl, knew he was asking for trouble when he reached for that gas can. I doubt any of my ex-boyfriends had particularly strong survival instincts. I can guarantee none of them have ever shot a gun. But here's this rugged Alaskan pilot, his handsome face stony with focus, totally in control as he prepares our camp for the night, probably going through a mental checklist. And I'm just standing here. What can I do to help?
There's a sleeping bag and mattress roll in there. Lay it on the floor over here.
The floor? I cringe at the worn boards.
Trust me, it'll be more comfortable than those bunks. Plus, it'll be warmer here, near the fire.
I follow instructions, quietly wondering if I'm getting this bed ready for him or myself. Or for us. My nerves flutter in my stomach at the thought. Jonah starts peeling off his outer layers and hanging them on one of several wire clotheslines above the wood stove, until he's down to a clingy cream-colored crew neck that reminds me of long johns with its quilted material. The three buttons at the collar are undone, exposing the hard ridge of his collarbone and the top of the pad of muscle that stretches down over his chest.
Give me your wet things.
All my things are wet, I mutter, shrugging off the slicker and the flannel jacket. Even the hem of my tunic is soaked. Jonah's gaze stalls on my chest a moment. Given I can see his nipples pebbled beneath his shirt, I can only imagine what mine look like, before holding out his hand. I frown at his palm near the base of his wrist. You're bleeding. He turns his hand to inspect the gash.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I scraped it on one of the boards over the windows. It's nothing.
It's bleeding. You must have a first aid kit somewhere in here. I dive down to begin rooting through the bag of basic survival gear. Rope, a hunting knife, flashlight, iodine tablets for drinking water, ammunition, until I find a small white kit.
I don't do band-aids.
Jonah scoffs, tossing my raincoat over the line next to his things. "Come here," I command softly, peeling the plastic wrapper away from the beige bandage as I wander over to him. After a moment's pause, he holds his large, rough hand out. With a painstakingly careful touch, I wrap his injured palm, all the while feeling his intense gaze boring into my face. "There," I murmur, smoothing my fingers over his forearm, quietly marveling at the corded muscle and the soft tickle of ash-blonde hair beneath my fingertips. "You've already ruined enough of my clothes with your blood." Words I never imagined saying to a guy.
"You asked why I kissed you."
I hazard a glance upward to find his piercing blue eyes alight with heat. "And you said it's because you wanted to."
"That wasn't the right answer."
He reaches up to smooth the wet strands of clingy hair off my forehead, his gaze wild as it skitters across my features.
"You have been driving me fucking insane for days, and I couldn't hold myself back for one more second."
"Really?" I say weakly, even as the tiny hairs on my nape prickle. This intimidating, sharp-tongued but soft-hearted, beautiful man is telling me he wants me, badly. And that's exactly what Jonah is, a man. All the other guys I've ever been with were just boys. A swirl of nervous energy charges through my body, with a flooding warmth close on its heels. It happens so fast. One moment, I'm merely touching Jonah's arm and he's merely touching my cheek. The next, his hand is hooked around the back of my neck and he's pulled my mouth to his. There's nothing soft or tentative about this kiss. It's as if he's been counting down the minutes and hours since this morning, waiting for this moment, and now that it's finally here, he's not going to waste a single second. I'm stuck in the middle of an Alaska mountain range, making out with Jonah. I can't believe this is happening, but whatever I convinced myself of earlier, this is a bad idea that I'm fully committing myself to for tonight. His lips ply mine open, and I taste his mouth for the second time today as his tongue slides in. Mint gum and traces of the cream soda he had in the plane. I don't even like cream soda, but on Jonah, I could drink an entire case. My fingers begin to roam his body, crawling up his chest, reveling in its hard planes and his full, round shoulders, tracing the ridges of his collarbones and where they join his thick neck. Finally, I let my arms loop around the back of his head so I can pull those full lips closer, if that's even possible. My brain is still trying to process what's happening when he groans softly.
"Kella."
I can only moan in response as every square inch of my body below my mouth begins burning for his touch. He adjusts his stance, setting his feet farther apart. His free hand splays across the small of my back, and he pulls me flush to him, our bodies contouring against each other. I feel the hard press of his erection against my stomach. His mouth leaves mine to find my neck, and I let out a giggle moan, the feel of his beard against my skin both intoxicating and tickling. It's followed by a straight-up, deep moan as he drags his teeth over the same spot.
"Your clothes are soaked,"
he murmurs, his hand sliding over my backside to test the hem of my tunic and my leggings, pausing to grip each side of me tightly, his fingertips digging into my flesh in a delicious way. He abruptly pulls away and takes two broad steps back.
"Take them off,"
he demands softly, his voice low.
"I'll hang them so they can dry."
He folds his arms over his broad chest and waits quietly, patiently, his fierce gaze locked on me, his lips parted. "You too." His pant legs are soaked.
"You first,"
he fires back, his eyes burning. The cabin is dead silent save for the drumbeat of rain. He's holding his breath, I realize. With a deep swallow and a sudden case of nerves, I collect the hem of my long shirt and slide it up over my torso, over my chest, curling my arms to get it past my head. Goosebumps erupt all over my skin as Jonah's eyes drift downward over my white lace bra, down over my flat stomach. He holds out a hand and I toss my shirt to him. And still he waits without a word. I kick off my rain boots and cast them aside, and then, Curling my thumbs under the waistband of my leggings, I peel them away, shimmying the wet cotton down my legs and off my ankles, my socks going with them. Jonah's eyes climb up my body and then drift again, stalling several times.
You're cold.
Yeah. Even though every inch of my skin feels like it's on fire under his gaze.
Better hurry up and finish then,
he murmurs with a crooked smile, my clothes dangling from his grip. We both know that my undergarments are dry. Well, dry as far as the rain is concerned. I feel lightheaded as I reach back to unclasp my bra, letting it loosen and slide from my arms. These are real, by the way, I murmur stupidly, as cool air skates across my pebbled nipples. His jaw clenches.
I see that.
I take a deep breath and then pluck away the elastic band at my hips, letting the skimpy lace fall to the floor.
Fuck,
he hisses, and then he's heading for the line, rushing to stretch and clip my things up with the available clothespins, while I stand in the cool, dark cabin, trying to fight the urge to curl my arms around myself. Something tells me Jonah prefers confidence.
In the bed. Now,
he mutters, and my heart begins to pound in my chest. I've never been with a guy who demands things like that. I never thought I'd find it a turn-on. I drop to my knees on the foam pad, the width of a twin mattress, and pull the fully unzipped sleeping bag over my body. And then I quietly watch Jonah yank off his boots and socks. He reaches over his head to peel his shirt off, and I gasp as I get my first view of Jonah's broad back, his olive-toned skin stretched across muscle that fans out from his spine and toward his shoulder blades. He turns and gives me an equally impressive view of his chest, coated in a fine dusting of ash-blonde hair that continues downward into a long, dark trail that disappears under his belt. I stare unabashed as he unfastens his belt and buckle with confidence, pushing everything off with one move. A light gasp slips from my lips as I take the sight of him in, feeling my eyes widen. Those unflattering baggy jeans hide the fact that his legs are thick and long and muscular, and coated with more of that ash-blonde hair, and that all of him is as well-proportioned. I feel my legs begin to part of their own volition. I have to peel my eyes upward as Jonah strolls toward me, his smile wicked and cocky. God, I've come to love that smile. It vanishes just as quickly, though, the moment he's settling his massive body down onto the tiny pad next to me, lifting the cover off my naked body to make room for himself beneath it. His bare skin is hot against mine, and yet I shiver. How have we gone from one surprise hallway kiss this morning to this? I am not this girl. I don't move this fast. And yet here I am, edging in closer to him, freely accepting his arm as he slides it beneath my head, welcoming his lips as they pry open my mouth, all while my heart pounds in my ears. I drag my long fingernails over his beard for the first time, occupying myself with the delicious, scratchy feel of it, while he seems eager to occupy himself with my body. Anticipation skitters along my spine, acutely aware of his hard length against my outer thigh as he toys with strands of my hair, before pressing his hand flat against my throat.
Can't say I expected this turn of events,
he murmurs, slowly smoothing his palm over my collarbone, over the contour of my left breast, stalling there a long moment before continuing down my stomach, my pelvis, farther, as far as he can reach, showing no hesitation as he seemingly memorizes my curves. My breath hitches as that hand slides between my legs. He touches me far more gently than I thought him capable.
You're nervous,
he murmurs, his coarse fingers unexpectedly soft as they sink into me. No, I'm not, I lie behind a whisper and a kiss.
Why are you nervous?
I hesitate. Because it's the first time? It sounds like a question. He seizes my bottom lip between his teeth playfully before releasing it.
And that's the only reason?
Do I have to admit the truth right now? That Jonah can be intimidating at times? That I felt the strokes of his judgmental brush before and it wasn't pleasant? And now I'm in a far more vulnerable position to be judged. He pulls away to peer down at me, his hand pausing its ministrations, his blue eyes shrewd as they study mine.
You know you're perfect, right?
Oh, of course I know that, I joke with faux confidence, trying to hide the fact that he's guessed at the real reason behind my nerves. But I'm not your type. You know, blonde and leggy. Good idea, Calla. Let's remind him of this right now. His brow arches, but in his gaze, I see confirmation of a guess.
That's not my type.
But you said...
You're my type.
His voice is gentle, but he levels me with a steady gaze. I pause, caught off guard by the seriousness in his eyes. And what is that exactly? With a deep sigh, he shifts, and then his mouth is following the same pathway of his palm.
Smart.
His tongue drags along my collarbone, back and forth several times, leaving a cool trail of wetness as it moves down to curl around my hardened nipple.
Fiery.
I gasp as he sucks hard on it once before releasing it. His giant, muscular body shifts downward, pushing my legs apart as it moves, his lips pressing kisses down the center of my stomach, making my abdominal muscles tense.
Witty.
I hold my breath as the coarse hairs of his beard tickle against my inner thighs. He lingers there. I shut my eyes and swallow hard, my mind screaming with anticipation.
And so damn beautiful,
he whispers, the words skating over me in a warm breeze. I let out a soft moan the moment his mouth settles on me. I can't believe this is actually happening. I can't believe Jonah is... I stare up at the wooden ceiling of this shabby little cabin in wonder, my heartbeat racing as my hormones go into overdrive, flooding my body with heat. He doesn't relent, doesn't pause, and the tiny guttural sounds escaping his throat are heady with desire. Not before long, my nervousness has faded, and I find myself fumbling to weave my fingers through his hair, rolling my pelvis against his mouth, calling out his name with my desperate cries, the only sound for miles upon miles, save for the pounding rain. By the time he climbs up to settle his hips between my thighs and push into me, I'm desperate for him. My limbs curl around his body as I watch his broad chest heave with each thrust, and his hooded eyes alight with fire, our gazes locked, and I wonder how on earth I could ever possibly have not wanted this man.
Am I going to wake up to find that gone in the morning, too?
Jonah murmurs, his voice scratchy and deep, but full of humor. I trail the tips of my long nails through the soft, dark blonde fuzz that coats Jonah's chest, deliciously damp from the sheen of sweat, circling first one nipple and then the other. No, I think we'll keep this. But this... My hand moves upward, sliding across his beard, tracing the hard lines of his jaw, the pad of my thumb smoothing over his soft lips. I think I'll clean this up a bit more for you. My head, settled against his chest, shakes with his deep chuckle.
What am I? Your doll?
I drag my finger south, down the center of his chest, ever so lightly, along the ridges of his stomach. I smile with delight when his muscles spasm. More like my well-groomed action figure. It's deathly silent in the cabin, save for the constant drum of falling rain against the roof, and his quickening breath, as I follow the dark trail of hair below his belly button, itching to go farther, to tease his velvety soft skin and watch him swell again.
Don't start something you're not ready to finish,
he warns. I slide my thigh over his. Who says I'm not ready to finish? I can't seem to get enough of Jonah. I can't even look at his mouth without thinking of it on me. Can't think of his hands without remembering where he's touched me. A nervous ripple courses through my body as the thought floods me now. But I do hold back. I've found a blissful resting spot in the crook of his arm, my body pressed along his side, absorbing his warmth, and I don't want to ruin the peaceful moment.
That fire needs another log.
I groan. Don't make me move. The foam roll is narrow and thin, and it does little to disguise the fact that we're lying on a cold, hardwood floor that's seen countless boots, And yet, it's easy to forget about that right now. My stomach lets out a deep growl. What are we going to do about food?
We're fine. There's a bunch of water, and we've got enough of this alone to feed us for days.
He stretches an arm to reach into his duffel bag and pulls out two bags with leathery strips of meat in them. What is that? Beef jerky?
Basically.
He holds up another with a deep rose color.
And this one's salmon.
I crinkle my nose at that.
I take it that's a no to salmon?
I hate fish.
Man, you are in the wrong part of the world.
Where did you get them anyway?
Ethel, remember her?
The woman who threatened to cut off her son's hand? Vaguely. Jonah chuckles.
She gave them to me the last time I was at her village.
He pulls a dark brown strip from the first bag and tears off a chunk with his teeth, his jaw tensing in a sexy way as he chews.
Here, try it.
He holds it out for me. I sniff. It has a smoky scent. Is it any good?
Better than any store-bought stuff I've ever had. And it's all we have to eat, so come on.
He taps my lips.
Take a bite.
I part my lips hesitantly, letting Jonah slide it in, his watchful gaze on my mouth as I tear off the tiniest piece between my front teeth. I let the intense flavor build on my tongue for a moment. Not bad, I admit, as I chew and swallow, and then burrow into his side with a shudder, the cool air against my bare back.
Give me a minute.
He presses a kiss against my forehead and then deftly maneuvers me off him. I huddle under the covers and watch him grab another log from the small pile in the corner and carefully fit it into the wood stove, completely unabashed by his stark nudity. There's certainly nothing left of that skinny teenaged boy from the picture. He's all broad muscle and strength, perfectly proportioned, his thighs solid and thick. He makes Corey look like a gangly teen, and Corey's only 2 years younger than him. Do you go to a gym around here?
Not in a while.
Then how?
Crazy good Norwegian jeans. You should have seen the forearms on my grandfather. And I stay active.
The flames begin to grow, adding light to the dim cabin and reflecting off his eyes, making the blue in them dance. Active like the past hour active? Because the way Jonah was moving over me, his muscles corded and straining, his skin slick, he definitely got a workout. My thighs tighten reflexively at the thought. I can still feel him inside me. Sharp eyes flicker to me before shifting back to the fire. As usual, he's figured out what I'm really asking, and he's deciding if he'll make me drag it out of him or offer it up freely.
I was seeing a pilot from the Coast Guard for a while last year.
What happened?
Nothing. She transferred back to the lower 48.
Do you miss her? What was she like? Did you spend a night on a dirty cabin floor by the fire with her, too? Would you still be with her if she hadn't left? He grabs the poker and jabs it into the stove.
I knew she wasn't sticking around, so I never let myself get attached.
I fidget with the slider on the sleeping bag's unfastened zipper, trying to push aside the dour thought that springs up. Just like you won't get attached to me because I'm leaving. Another selfish thought quickly follows that admits, I want Jonah to grow attached to me, to pine and hurt for me after I'm gone, to care that I'm not there, because then I won't be alone in it. But I'm guessing he's too smart to let that happen. Are you always so honest about everything? I ask mildly, brutally so sometimes, though I think I'm beginning to admire that quality. It's painfully refreshing. I watch his face as it hardens with thought, his perfectly groomed jaw, the hairs mussed but still sexy, tensing. The mood in the cabin has suddenly shifted. And then he sighs and, tossing the poker to the stone pad next to the stove, moves for the door, pushing it wide open. He simply stands there and watches the deluge of rain as it beats against the valley floor, his hands hooked on the wood above him, his naked silhouette framed by the doorway. Cooler air flooding in. I sense the need to stay quiet and let him work through whatever is on his mind, so I sit up and hug the sleeping bag tight to my body. And I selfishly admire his firm body. That ass I couldn't see in those stylish baggy jeans, it's there all right. Round and rock hard with two long red marks. From my nails, I realize. Several more marks span his back. I don't even remember getting that rough with him.
My dad was like that. He'd come right out and tell you what he thought of you, and a lot of the time it wasn't anything you'd want to hear. But he'd say it anyway. Couldn't help himself. It was like he'd explode if he didn't get it out.
He chuckles.
When I met Ren, I didn't know what to think of him at first. He was this quiet man who kept his head down and seemed to just let things happen. Didn't yell about anything. He was about as opposite to my dad in every way as you could get. I don't think he knew what to think of me either. I was pretty sure he was going to can my ass within the first week. But George said I needed to come work for Wild, and I trusted George.
I smile, thinking back to my dad's words. He said you were full of piss and vinegar when you started. Another chuckle.
Definitely not sugar and spice, that's for sure.
He knew you were a good pilot.
It's funny, you know. My dad may have taught me how to fly a plane, but Ren was the first one to ever tell me I was any good at it. Maybe if he had, I wouldn't have bailed on the Air Force. Maybe I would have cared more to please him. I mean, I'd do anything for Ren.
He pauses.
I know he doesn't have the best track record with you, and God knows he has his faults, but he's up there with the best guys I know.
His voice drifts with a hard swallow. I'm really glad Agnes called me, and that I came to Alaska, I admit. That's the first time I've actually said those words. It's the first time I've truly felt them, deep down inside. He turns his head, giving me his profile.
You mentioned staying in Alaska longer today.
Yeah, in a moment of blind jealousy. I wasn't really thinking when I...
You should.
His gaze drifts outward again.
For Ren, the next few weeks, months, are going to be hard. It'd be better if you were in Alaska for them, with him.
Is he even going to be around much, though? Sounds like he'll be in Anchorage most of the time. Jonah's quiet for a long moment.
He won't ask you to put your life on hold for him, but he really likes having you around. I can tell.
That's basically what I'd be doing. Hitting pause on restarting my career at another bank, to wardrobe changes in Diana's Tahoe and fashion shoots, to Simon's lattes and sage advice, to stilettos and clubs on Friday nights, back to a long-distance phone relationship with my dad, and likely no relationship at all with Jonah. My stomach tightens with the thought. Maybe you're right. I don't know what to do, though. I can't just keep rebooking every week. They charged me $200.
See if you can cancel your return ticket and rebook it when you're ready.
I actually might be able to do that. Simon did say it was flexible. As usual, Jonah makes it sound so simple.
Your life will be waiting for you when you go back, and it won't matter if it's next week or next month or next year.
Next year?
Maybe not that long,
he mutters.
My point is, you won't lose anything by staying. That life will still be there to go back to.
My eyes drift over his perfect body again. I just spent 2 hours tangled up with this guy. And what about this? If I did stay that long, don't you think we'd just complicate things? Because I'm definitely feeling something for Jonah, and it's not just physical. What will weeks or months of doing this do to us?
Maybe, but I don't ever let that shit stop me from doing what I need to do. I live my life by the day, and today, you're here.
He pulls the door shut and turns to face me. My eyes can't help but flicker downward. He certainly hasn't had an adverse reaction to the cold air.
But we can stop this right now if you want, if that's going to be a deciding factor for you staying.
An unexpectedly strong wave of disappointment hits me at the suggestion, at the thought that I won't get to feel his mouth or his touch or his weight or his heat anymore. No, I do not want that. Let's not get hasty. He smirks.
I had a feeling you'd say that.
He strolls forward to drop to his knees at the end of the foam mat and yanks the sleeping bag off me. Goose flesh springs over my skin instantly. Jonah's eyes are like lasers drawing over my skin, taking everything in, deciding where to attack first. I help him decide by stretching my body out for him, even as my stomach does a nervous flip. His strong, rough-skinned hands seize my ankles and begin their slide upward, pushing my legs apart as they go, and all my worries about tomorrow are instantly forgotten. Chapter 22. Thwack!